anything away. Not anything. When was this? When did you see this girl?
Last night, after dinner. We were in the trees, playing Follow the Screams.
Peach leaned toward Wink and put her mouth near her ear and whispered loud enough for all of us to hear.
She saw me. She didn't see Hops and Moon because it was their turn to hide. But she saw me and told me she was a ghost and then asked me if I was scared. But I wasn't. Ghosts don't scare me.
That's true, Wink said, echoing Peach's whisper yell. You're not scared of anything. Peach nodded.
And then I shut my eyes and counted to 10, like you're supposed to whenever you see a ghost or a fairy. And when I opened them, she was gone.
Hops yawned and rubbed his freckled nose with his palm. It wasn't just any girl in the woods. Moon yawned too, and stretched his skinny arms over his shaggy red head. We recognized her. It was that kissing friend of Leaf's. She used to come to the hayloft sometimes. I stayed calm. I was so calm. I sat there at the kitchen table and just smiled, and no way in hell would the kids have guessed that my heart had started screaming.
Poppy. Three of Wink's orphans were playing in the woods, running between the trees in the dark. The girl would scream, very soft and believable, and the boys would follow. The girl caught me. She snuck up fast and quiet. I told her I was a ghost, but she only shrugged and looked like her older sister. I told her she should be scared, that she should run away. I told her I'd come to a bad end. I told her I was wicked to the core, and there was no hope for me now. But she just shook her head and went back to her screams. I watched them. I watched them all later in the hayloft. I climbed the ladder and didn't make a sound. Not one sound. I watched Midnight count Wink's freckles. I listened to her go on and on about the thing in the deep. She'd never shut up about that book, good God. But Midnight just ate it up, right up. He pushed her big ruby hair behind her ear and looked at her like Leaf never looked at me. I was doing a lot of thinking lately. There was something about the dark and the silence and the being alone. It calmed me down and made me smarter. I was already smart, God knows. I was smarter than all of them. But I was smart in a different way now. I took everything in and noticed it. Really noticed it. When I stepped into the river, I reveled in the cold. I savored the feel of the smooth rocks under my feet. I stopped thinking of myself. I barely thought of myself at all. I thought of myself so little that I began to worry that I'd been the only thing keeping myself in existence. And now that I wasn't the center of my attention, I'd disappear, poof, into thin air. And no one would ever know.
Midnight. Wink and I went to the Blue Twist River after the orphans were tucked into their beds. The moon was bright and blazing, and Wink showed me a shortcut. Down the gravel road between our houses, half a mile, then a quick turn to the left through the nearby cornfield. It was painted mountain corn, the only kind that would grow in our altitude. The field belonged to a young, bearded, organic farmer, and Wink said he was always growing strange new things, like yellow beets and purple cauliflower, and sweet chocolate peppers and watermelon radishes. The high-end restaurants in Broken Bridge loved it. They bragged about it on chalk sidewalk boards outside their restaurants. House-made cappellini with organic farm leeks, chili flake and parmesan, or Colorado red quinoa with grilled white asparagus, pickled mushrooms, romesco, and parsley. The movie stars came to the mountains to romp in the snow and get away from Hollywood, but that didn't mean they wanted to give up their expensive Los Angeles food. I followed Wink, the cornstalks clutching at her hair and the hem of her acorn skirt with their grasping paws. The corn was only waist high, but it was already creepy as hell, rustling, rustling in the dark. I breathed a sigh of relief when we pushed through the last bunch of stalks and stepped out onto the bank near the river. The Blue Twist was clean and cold, and ran right down from the mountains, sparkling, churning, melted snow. We sat down on the grass by the edge, Wink across from me. I could no longer hear the rustling of the corn. It was drowned out by the sound of water rushing over stones, and I was glad for it.
"Don't show the orphans this shortcut, okay, Midnight? Mim thinks they'll drown. I only go here when they're asleep."
I nodded. Wink slipped off her red sandals and put one foot in the river. She had small feet. They practically fit in my palm. She reached into her pocket and took out a candle. She set it on a nearby stone, took out a matchbook, lit the wick. She reached in again and took out a pack of yellow tarot cards. A coyote howled, high and eerie. It wasn't too close, but it wasn't that far away either. Wink shuffled the cards. They were newer than her mother's, less worn on the corners. I stared at her as she shuffled.
"We have to talk about it. We have to talk about the letter that Thomas showed me. We have to talk about the fact that Poppy's missing. We have to talk about the girl the orphans saw in the woods."
"I'm not nearly as good as Mim or Leaf," Wink said, and her words rushed fast, like they were racing against the river. "I'm much better with auras and ghosts. But Mim won't read cards for me anymore. She read B. Lee's tarot once, and the cards told her B. would die young. Mim refused to read for us after that. She'll only do our tea leaves and our palms. And even then, she only reads for small things."
Wink, red hair falling over her shoulders, laid the cards down in a cross-shaped pattern on the grass.
"Wink?"
"Yes?"
"Poppy's missing."
"I know. That's why I'm trying to read the cards."
"That must have been who Peach saw in the woods, right?"
Wink didn't look at me, didn't say anything.
"What was she doing in the woods?"
Wink shrugged. "I saw Thomas today, at her house. He showed me a letter, and he said we need to find her. That it was a clue to finding her." Wink looked up.
"What did the letter say?"
"She talked about climbing Three Death Jack with Thomas, and being a Greek god. And she said something about jumping, and how Thomas should trust me."
"What do you make of that, Wink?"
Wink shifted and reached into the pocket of her acorn skirt again. She pulled out a black piece of paper and handed it to me. I held it next to the candle flame and read.
"It's another clue."
Wink's head was down, staring at the cards again. Nothing but red curls.
"I saw Briggs in the woods today, digging. He's looking for the gold marble, the one in the letter."
She paused.
"Poppy mentioned you in both of the notes. That's interesting."
"It was." I let a minute or two pass. Rushing river, coyote howling, heart beating. "What are the cards telling you? Do you know where she is?"
Wink didn't answer.
The candle flickered. I squinted in the dark and looked at the cards. I saw swords and a wheel. I saw a chalice and a hanged man. I saw a queen of hearts upside down. I saw a tower. Wink was quiet for a long time. Finally, she looked up, looked right at me, and frowned.
"The cards contradict one another."
A breeze blew up off the river, and the candle went out. Darkness.
"Mim is much better at this. I don't have the gift, Midnight. I can't tell where she is."
Wink held her finger on one of the cards.
"She seems to be in two places at once."
"Why don't we go home and ask Mim to find Poppy? Maybe she'll know what the cards mean." Wink shook her head.
"I already tried that. Mim read Poppy's cards and then wouldn't tell me what they said. She does that sometimes."
Wink reached into her pocket, got a match, and lit the candle again. Her pale face floated back into view. She picked up the cards, put them away, and then wrapped her arms around my neck and pressed her small, cold feet into mine.
Who did the orphan see? Who do you think it was, Wink? She shrugged again, her shoulders moving against my chest.
Maybe it was Poppy, and maybe they're lying. You never can tell with Peach and the twins.
I put my arm around Wink's legs and kissed her skinny knees. Wink put her hands in my hair, her thumbs behind my ears. I kissed the skeleton key I found on a chain around her neck. I moved the key with my nose and kissed her collarbone.
Midnight. What are you afraid of? Are you afraid of anything? Like how Poppy is afraid of the Roman Luck House?
I don't know. Falling, maybe.
Falling?
Falling. I have nightmares about it sometimes.
Lots of people have nightmares about falling.
They do?
Bee Lee wakes up screaming sometimes. She dreams that she's fallen asleep on a cloud, but then a storm comes up quick, and the thunder shakes her off, and she falls.
I nodded. I dream that I'm running through a forest or a field, and I don't know why. I'm just running from something. And suddenly there's a cliff in front of me, and I don't see it. And then I'm falling down a deep ravine, down past walls of rock and stone. And then my body is breaking, and I can hear the bones all snapping right before I wake up. Wink sighed softly.
Mim thinks dreams can foretell the future. But I don't know. I think dreams are just dreams, mostly.
Well, I think my dream is trying to tell me to stop being a coward. Alabama isn't afraid of heights. He isn't afraid of anything. Not heights, not cliff jumping, not dying.
Everyone is afraid of dying, Midnight.
And she didn't say it, and I didn't say it. But we were both thinking of Poppy, tied up in the Roman Luck House, crying, screaming, scared out of her mind, knocking at death's door. Midnight! My dad, calling down from the attic. I went up the narrow stairs, slow. He was sitting at his desk, surrounded by books, like always. He looked kind of sleepy. Is everything all right?
Yeah, Dad.
Of course it is. He took off his thick glasses and rubbed his eyes. He moved his hands away and looked at me again. His light blue irises looked naked without the specks.
You seem different, Midnight. I know the sound of your step like I know the feel of my own heartbeat. It's heavier this week, and I haven't seen you wear that expression since last winter. What's wrong?
I considered it, telling him everything. But he wouldn't know what to do about Poppy. He wouldn't know what to do at all. I understood this suddenly, loudly, like someone had shouted it from a rooftop. It was something Alabama had always known about him, I think.
It's all right, they said.
I forced a smile and made sure it hit my eyes.
Just girl trouble, Dad.
No big deal. He nodded and put his glasses on. His shoulders relaxed a little. I wondered if he'd been worried I would ask about Mom, about how long she was staying in France. My dad went back to his books. I went downstairs, to the old black rotary phone in the kitchen. The white tiles felt good under my feet. Cool. The number was on the fridge. I called, and it rang and rang. No one picked up. What time was it in France? I didn't know. I went back upstairs, unbuttoned my shirt, slid off my pants, and climbed into bed. I sunk my face into my pillow, right next to Will and the black caravans. I breathed in deep. I smelt books and jasmine.
Wink. The cards told the whole story, laid out on the grass in swords, wands, cups, coins, queens, kings, knights, and fools. Midnight couldn't read them, but I could, despite what I'd said. Peach and the twins saw a girl in the woods, but Bee Lee saw something too. She was down by the Blue Twist a few days ago. She wasn't allowed to go to the river on her own, but she loved to watch the fish in the swirling white water and wouldn't listen to me, not about this. She came running back down the gravel road, cheeks pink and hair sweaty and sticking to her forehead. "I saw a girl," she said. "A girl with long yellow hair and a black dress, like a princess in a story. She jumped into the blue twist, and you can't swim in the blue twist. It goes too fast and you drown. You swallow water and your lungs fill up and you drown." "Show me," I said. I followed her to the spot a mile away down the gravel road, but there was no trace of a girl in the water. It was just spinning white curls of river. "I saw her," Bee said. "I really did, Wink." I nodded, because I knew. That was the first time I felt doubt. Just a twinge, just a little bite. Nothing more than the imps and plum babies pinching the Hicks sisters in the bluebell field in the green witch of Black Dog Hill. That night, after midnight left, and after I'd run my errand, I snuck in through the kitchen, carefully closing the screen door so it wouldn't slam. I set the basket on the counter and tiptoed upstairs. Bee Lee was sleeping in my bed. She did that when she had nightmares. I crawled in next to her and brushed her hair off her cheek. Her eyes opened.
"Where you been, Wink?"
"Gathering wild strawberries in the forest," I said. "Wild strawberries picked by the light of the moon have magical powers. I'll give you some tomorrow, with sugar and cream, and then we'll see what happens."
"Will I turn into a frog?" she asked.
I nodded.
"Will I turn into a princess?"
I nodded. She smiled and closed her eyes again.
Midnight. "There are two girls waiting on the steps for you." Dad had just gotten back from his run. 3 miles every morning, 2 every night. Sweat trickled down the back of his neck, and his whole face was flushed. "Not the blonde and not the redhead. Two new girls." I pushed back the bowl of homemade granola and milk I was nibbling on. I wasn't hungry anyway. I walked across the kitchen and opened the front screen door. Stripes. They turned their heads and looked at me over their shoulders. "Did you know?" Buttercup said. Eyes hooded. Voice crisp. Black hair dripping down. "That Poppy is missing?"
"Missing,"
Zoe said. Echo, echo. Her chin moved up and down, and her short brown curls followed. The morning air had a misty quality, hazy and kind of marvelous. It must have rained again in the night. I looked over at the Bell Farm. It was unusually quiet. There was a strange car in the driveway, so Mim was doing a reading. But I didn't see Wink or the orphans. Buttercup and Zoe without Poppy and without the rest of the yellows. They seemed less scary somehow. Almost vulnerable. I sat down on the step next to Zoe, and she moved the skirt of her black dress to make room. I nodded at each of them in turn. Buttercup. Zoe. It felt strange to say their names for the very first time without the usual feeling of dread hitting my tongue. "Yeah, I know Poppy is missing. Why are you here?"
"I don't know,"
Buttercup said. And her black eyes reminded me of Wink suddenly. Open and innocent.
"I mean, yes I do."
"Yes we do," said Zoe.
Buttercup slipped the skull-shaped backpack off her shoulder and rummaged around inside. She pulled out something thin and black and held it between her fingertips, gingerly, like it was poison.
"Take it."
I did. It was a small sheet of lined paper, folded in half. I just looked at it, sitting on my palm.
"Poppy likes to write on black paper with a silver pen,"
Buttercup said.
"I found it in my backpack this morning."
I opened it. Silver letters on a charcoal background. It was Poppy's handwriting, just like Thomas's letter. And Briggs's. I knew the loop of her G. I recognized the plump belly of her B. It was as familiar to me as the blue veins in her lily-white arms.
Buttercup and Zoe. It's for the best, I swear it is. And I'm always right. I always am. Do you remember that time we went apple picking last fall? We stole a bucket of them from that big old tree near the abandoned elementary school, and I had you both write down apple poems as I made them up on the spot. And the poems were all about me, about how I was gray-eyed and apple-cheeked, about how I ruled with an iron fist, and how I was the apple of everyone's eye. How could you stand me? I can't even stand myself, not anymore. You should go talk to Midnight. He has things to tell you. I have a bad feeling, Buttercup said, and shuddered, quick and gentle, like the shimmering leaves of the nearby aspen tree. She rubbed her long, thin fingers up and down over her striped stocking legs. Her fingernails weren't painted black like usual. They were just a plain, natural pink. I think Poppy did something to herself. Zoe just nodded. That feeling came back. The one from the Roman Luck House. Flu sick and too little sleep and clammy skinned fear. She wouldn't. Poppy's not that kind of girl. Who knows what kind of girl Poppy is? Zoe this time, all on her own. What things do you have to tell us? Buttercup asked. She said you had things to tell us, in a letter. Poppy wanted me to tell them about the Roman Luck House, about what me and Wink did to her there. I knew she did. But instead I just shrugged, quick, like Wink. Poppy wrote notes on black paper to Thomas and Briggs, too. Maybe this is what she wanted you to know. Thomas thinks they're clues to finding out where she's gone. I haven't made up my mind, though. I'm still thinking. Buttercup gave me a small smile then. No red lipstick. We've decided that we're sorry we were mean to you in the past, Midnight. I stared at her for a second. She seemed sincere. It's okay. It's not okay. Zoe. The thick stubs of her brown curly hair rubbed against her cheekbones. She was looking down at her black boots, toes touching, ankles out. Poppy was a bad influence on us. We can see that now. Buttercup nodded. I thought of Poppy, in the Roman Luck House, her arms above her head, dried blood on her face, whispering, "You didn't come back. You left me here and didn't come back." If Poppy was a bad influence, then so was I. Everything went hazy at the edges suddenly. Blurry. Blurr. I blinked. And breathed in deep. Again and again. I'll walk you girls home, I said. We found Briggs and Thomas on our way back into town. They were half a mile from the Roman Luck place. Briggs was standing in the middle of three small mounds of dirt, a shovel nearby on the ground. He looked up at us and wiped his hand across his forehead. His fingernails were dirty, and black creases stretched across the skin of his palms. Thomas stood next to him, close, like they'd just been talking. What are you two doing? Buttercup had her arms crossed over her chest, and her elbows were moving up and down with her breath. Briggs whispered something, cleared his throat, spoke louder. I'm looking for a marble. Pause. It's stupid, I know. I'll never find it. Still, I had to try. You're supposed to be helping me look, by the way. Briggs glanced at me out of the corner of his eyes. I looked right back at him. I saw your letter. Wink showed me. Thomas reached into the zippered pocket on his designer jeans and took out his own black piece of poppy paper. I was just telling Briggs that I think the letters are clues. Clues to finding Poppy, Buttercup added. Why the hell would she run off in the first place? Briggs groaned, deep and kind of sad. He yanked off his sweaty t-shirt and threw it on the ground. What happened to spark all this? I picked up the shovel and put it behind my back. I had to tell them. I had to suck it up and be the hero and tell the Yellows what happened to their fearless leader. Wink and I tricked her. We tied her to the grand piano in the Roman Luck House and left her there all night. All four Yellows went still. You did what? Briggs. His head cocked to the side. My palms were sweaty on the wooden handle, sweaty and slick. We tied her to the grand piano and left her in the music room until dawn. When we got back, she was dimmed, if that makes sense. I never thought it would crush her, not like that. And I haven't seen her since that morning, which was a lie, because I had seen her on the top of the hayloft just for a split second. And I'd smelled her perfume in my room every night, too. But the Yellows didn't need to know this. I might have imagined it all anyway. I focused on Briggs, since he was the one I was the most worried about. His face was flushed, down his cheekbones, across his neck. This was it. The Yellows were going to beat the hell out of me. And I had it coming. Briggs grabbed for the shovel, and it slid right out of my sweaty palms. I didn't even resist. He put his arm back and threw it. Right past me. It hit one of the trees hard and fell to the ground. A quiet, gentle thud. After that, Briggs just stood there, staring at me. He didn't look angry anymore. He just looked tired.
"We don't blame you for tricking her."
Buttercup put her hand on my forearm and rubbed her fingers up and down from my wrist to my elbow.
"What Poppy did to Wink at the Roman Luck party was unforgivable.
We helped Poppy do it." The wind picked up and blew Thomas's shaggy blonde hair all around his head, like it was trying to get his attention. "We helped her humiliate Wink." Briggs kept staring at me, one blue eye, one green. "I saw someone out here in the woods last night. A girl that looked just like Poppy. I only saw her for a second, right before she disappeared back into the dark. You want to know what I think?" No one nodded, but he went on anyway. "I think Poppy is fucking with us." Long pause. "Or she's dead, and she's haunting us." Thomas said it kind of defiantly, chin up, like he expected us to start laughing. Which Briggs did. "So she's writing letters from beyond the grave? That's so stupid. Poppy is a fighter, like me. She's not a quitter."
"Poppy is a lot of things," I said, and meant it.
"Look, Wink and I started this. Whatever happened in the Roman Luck House, whatever Poppy went through, it led to her going missing. I'm to blame." Buttercup turned suddenly and gave me a hug. Her arms were long and warm. My mom had always said that fear brought out the truth in people. She based entire books on it. I guess Buttercup's truth was better than I'd thought.
"I'm worried about Poppy," she whispered in my ear. "I'm scared for her."
"Me too," I said. "I'm going home." Thomas started walking away, talking to us over his shoulder. "I'm going to study my letter, and then I'm going to search every damn nook and cranny until I find her."
"We'll help you,"
Buttercup said. And Zoe nodded. And Briggs followed behind.
Poppy. The thing about Briggs, the secret thing, was that he never hurt a fly. He was a bully, and like most bullies, like all bullies but me, he was a baby underneath it all. At least Midnight was a baby straight up. There was something to respect in that. There was. I said before that Thomas was the sad one, the sensitive one. But Briggs? I'd once seen Briggs cry over a spotted owl in the park that had broken its wing and kept hopping around because he couldn't fly. Briggs tried to hide his tears, but I saw them, and heard the way he was sniffling, too, on his knees in the grass, and his voice was thick and choked, and he kept asking me over and over what he should do, as if I was some sort of spotted owl wing healer. And right before the bird, Briggs had been taunting a nerdy little kid about his thick glasses and the soccer ball he couldn't kick with a dam. And the whole time, it never occurred to him, the contradiction. I used to meet the Yellows in the morning, not too early, at Lone Tree Joe. In the summer, it was filled with wealthy, weasel-faced hipsters on break from school and staying in their parents' vacation homes until September. But I was Poppy, and had to have the best, even if it meant rubbing elbows with the non-local trust fund brat packs. It seems like a million years ago, getting expensive lattes, shaken with ice, just the right combination of espresso to milk, just the right toffee color, or I'd complain. I once convinced Buttercup and Zoe to help me dig my own grave. We were bored, and I was in a macabre mood, and I wanted to see what it was like, to lie in the dirt 6 feet under like a dead person. We tromped out to the woods with shovels stolen from outside Lauren's hardware store. They whined and whined, but eventually we got a good trench dug out between two trees. I plopped down inside and crossed my arms over my chest, like Wednesday Addams, and Zoe leaned over the edge and said something about worms and spiders. But I didn't care. I stayed there for 20 minutes with my eyes closed. I wasn't scared. It didn't even feel that morbid. It just felt sort of peaceful, really. Briggs caught me watching him in the woods. He called out my name, kind of sad and desperate. But by then I was already gone, flitting through the night like one of Wink's fairies. Briggs had been digging in the dirt and muttering about a golden marble like some half-crazed, sweating farm laborer, and I couldn't figure out why. Not for a while. I had to sink down and lie on the dirt in the forest and put some pieces together before I got to the bottom of it.
Wink. I saw Buttercup and Zoe on midnight steps. Buttercup, sleek as a selkie, smooth black hair and olive skin, like the taciturn enchantress in Lost Lies and Runaway Sighs. Zoe, sparkly hazel eyes and thick black lashes, and a small pointed nose like the Fae in Rat Hall and the Broom Girls. When she smiled at midnight, her smile was as sparkly as her eyes. All three talked for a while, and then walked right through my farm, right into the forest, and down the path. I got the orphans out of bed and took them into town to get ice cream for breakfast. I did this sometimes in the summer when Mim had her readings. We went to the little place by the library that was run by a witchy lady with long white hair. She opened the shop at 10 in the morning because she believed that ice cream was sometimes for breakfast, too. B. Lee got strawberry. She always got strawberry, but she never could tell about Peach and the twins. Felix went for the pistachio, and so did I. We were all sitting on the green benches in the park, eating in the sun, when I saw her, standing in a brick alley across the road, the shadows surrounding her like a pack of wolves. No one else could see her. I knew they couldn't. Just me. I gave the rest of my waffle cone to Hops and walked across the street without another thought, like she was the blonde, bloodthirsty siren in Three Songs for a Drowning. I walked into the alley, bravely, right into the pack of wolf shadows. But she was already gone.
Midnight. I stood in the kitchen and listened. Dad was upstairs in his attic, on the phone. His voice drifted down through the cracks in the floorboards and settled on my ears like dust. He was speaking German with the occasional Latin phrase thrown in. I only spoke a bit of French, but Alabama was fluent in it, like our mom. My dad spoke four languages, if you counted Latin, which I did. His voice was a song I didn't want to end. It made me feel safe. It made me feel normal. There was a knock on the front door. I'd been expecting it somehow. Peach was standing on the steps, red curls and bare feet.
"Follow me," she said.
So I followed her, short, strong legs pounding into the ground with focused, kid-like purpose. Across the road and into the garden. Wink was sitting in the strawberry patch, feet in the dirt, fat white clouds shielding her from the passionate noonday sun.
"I was up in the hayloft,"
Peach said to both me and Wink, now that she'd gathered us together.
It didn't smell like hay. It smelled like tea or flowers. And this was on the floor.
She handed me a piece of black paper. Wink watched me take it, face calm and passive, like it was nothing, just an ordinary thing. Another note from a missing girl left in a hayloft. I felt Peach staring at me.
I can read, she said. I can read all kinds of things. I'm really good at it. Better than you, probably.
I hadn't questioned her reading skills. It hadn't even occurred to me. But Peach wasn't the kind of kid to let that stop her from putting me in my place. I didn't want to open the letter. I wouldn't. I had to. I did. My fingers were clammy. They left damp smudges on the page.
Midnight, it's up to you. Show me what you're made of. Gather the yellows. Go to the woods. Find me. Find me in the mist.
I read it again, and again, and then I gave the note to Wink. Peach shook her curly hair, chin to the right and left.
I read the note, and that's how I knew it wasn't for any of us orphans. Going into the mist is what Mim calls contacting the spirits. If you're having a seance, I want to come.
No, Wink said, softly. Not to this. But later we can hold another seance in the hayloft, just us. And I'll let you be the medium this time, all right? Peach tapped her finger on the tip of her nose and started nodding.
I'll make a great medium. The best ever.
Wink smiled, and the tips of her ears popped out between piles of red hair.
You will,
she replied, very serious. Peach ran off, shouting to Hops and Moon, wherever they were, about how they were going to be so jealous because Wink put her in charge of a seance, and soon she would be bossing ghosts and spirits around. Just wait until tomorrow in the hayloft. Wink picked the last three ripe strawberries off their green stems and gave one to me. I fiddled with the strawberry, spinning it in my palm. The flowery smell in the hayloft that Peach was talking about? It's jasmine.
Poppy wore jasmine oil.
Wink looked up, green eyes wide open and innocent, like always. I nodded. I didn't tell her about my bedroom, about how the sheets and pillows smelled like poppy at night. I just couldn't do it. It came too close to admitting that Poppy had been in my bed. And I didn't want Wink to know this. Buttercup and Zoe came to my house this morning. Buttercup found a black note from Poppy, too.
What did it say?
Wink ate a strawberry. Two small bites. Something about me and something about the time they went apple picking. I walked them home and we found Briggs and Thomas in the woods. I told them, Wink. I told them we're the reason Poppy is missing. I told them that we tied her up and left her in the Roman Luck House. Wink dug her small pink toes into the black soil, past her heel, up to the ankle.
I think Poppy threw herself in the blue twist midnight. I think she drowned. And I think one of the yellows is writing the notes.
The world started spinning. I dropped my strawberry and pressed my hands to my eyes. Stop with the blur. Stop all the blurring. I can't take it. I can't. I sat down in the dirt, and Wink's arms went around me, tight. I took deep breaths and moved my hands away from my face so I could hug her back. She was wearing a fraying green cardigan over her overalls, and she smelled like strawberries and soil and jasmine.
Poppy. I was there when Midnight found the yellows down by the river, waiting for my body to wash ashore or something, though it never would. It never, ever would. I watched them all, and they didn't see me, not one damn speck of me. I liked being invisible. I was learning things. There were so many things I'd missed before, back when I always needed to be the center of attention. Midnight told them all about some letter I supposedly wrote that said I wanted them to come together in the woods for a seance. As if I would ever, ever, ever ask them to hold a seance and contact my spirit. Everyone knows that I don't believe in that crap. Grandpa never had any patience for the mystical, and neither do I. That stuff was for Wink and her mother and all their other fairy ilk. Not for me. Midnight got three of them to agree right off the bat. Thomas wanted to get out his Ouija board and ask it about the letter clues, and Buttercup and Zoe nodded in that twee twin way that used to drive me up a wall. Briggs just laughed, though. He knelt down and splashed cold river water on his face and just laughed, and went on and on about how I hadn't even been missing that many days, and I'd gone missing before, and it was nothing to get worked up about. The bastard. Midnight reminded him what he'd been up to lately, digging around in the forest for a marble like a lunatic. All because he'd gotten a letter, too. And Briggs shut up after that. I was there when they met in a little meadow near the Roman Luck House at midnight, flashlights dancing across the forest floor. I was watching. Thomas set up the Ouija board on the ground, right on the pine needles and dirt. He was so serious and careful and solemn about it that I half wanted to laugh, and half wanted to put my hand on my heart and swear him my everlasting loyalty. They set their fingers on the pointer and then started asking so many questions that the Ouija board could never have kept up, even if it actually worked, which it didn't. Thomas asked about Three-Death Jack and the Greek gods and what it all meant, and I remembered the time the two of us sat up on the mountain watching the skiers, and it made me kind of sad and nostalgic. Briggs asked about the gold marble and teacups and lemonade, and it sounded like Alice in Wonderland gibberish. Except it wasn't. Buttercup and Zoe asked about apple picking and apple poems, and Midnight asked if the mist was a spiritual place or a real place, and the pointer never moved. Not once. Not even a flicker. Finally, Midnight said they needed Wink. Wink could find me, if anyone could, and that was when it all really began. When it got aching and beautiful and palpable and true. They all started fighting, quiet at first, and then louder and louder until their voices echoed through the trees like the black-haired Bloodly boys at one of their midnight feasts. Oh, hell. I was talking like her now. Like Wink. Anyway, you should have heard them, arguing about who knew me best, and why I really disappeared. Why I would run away. Why I would throw myself in the twist. Thomas said I did it because I was sad. But that's because he's sad. And Briggs said I would never do it, because I'm a fighter. But that's because he's a fighter. And Buttercup said I felt guilty about all my past cruelty, because she feels guilty about hers. And Zoe said that if I wanted to run away or throw myself in the river, it was my right to do so, because she wants that to be her right, too. And none of them, not one, came close to the truth. Except Midnight. He repeated what he'd said earlier, about how they needed Wink, and off they went to get her.
Wink. They needed my help. I knew they would. I washed my hair with cinnamon soap and put on my acorn skirt and waited for them in the hayloft. I told them we had to have the seance in the Roman Luck House, that it all had to end where it began. I took one of the extra quilts Mim kept in a trunk at the top of the stairs, and I threw it over my shoulder and then grabbed my basket and we walked through the woods together. I laid the blanket on the floor in the music room. I took three white candles out of my basket and placed them in the middle. I knew how it went. I'd seen Mim hold seances 7 times. She didn't do it for every client, only the special ones. The special ones with a lot of money. I went off to the corner and stood there silently for a bit, as if I was preparing myself, but it was mainly for dramatic effect. Midnight was quiet and didn't say much. He was scared. All good heroes are scared if they know the evil they face. Briggs asked why I didn't bring a Ouija board, and when I told him I didn't have one, He looked like he didn't believe me. Thomas clung to the shadows in the corner of the room, like he was trying to hide, like he was Anthony Twilight in 14 Stolen Things. Buttercup and Zoe cuddled into each other and whispered in each other's ears and held hands. I lit the candles. It began.
Midnight. Me and the Yellows found Wink in the hayloft. Her eyes had a look in them when she saw us all climbing up the ladder, like she'd known we'd come for her. She grabbed the quilt and basket that she'd already packed. That's how ready she was. Wink and I walked side by side down the path, not talking, like that very first time, when we'd stumbled into Poppy's party. Wink set the unlit candles on the blanket and then stood in one of the corners, in the dark. I figured she was meditating, or whatever it is that mediums do. I sat on the green sofa and listened to the floorboards groaning in the hallway, though no one was walking on them. I listened to the tree branches scraping the unsmashed pieces of the bay window. I listened to the old house make its old house sounds. Rasp, creak, groan. Here I was again, in the Roman Luck House in the middle of the night. Tricking Wink and then tricking Poppy, and kissing them both and tying them both up. And now I was back in the house again, and Poppy was missing, and I'd gathered the Yellows for a seance. Briggs tried to make a few jokes about how stupid seances are, and how it's all bullshit, just wrapping tables and sliding panels and fake beards, but no one laughed or even looked at him. We all sat down on the blanket in a circle. Wink lit the candles.
Wink. I made everyone hold hands. I looked very grave and said that if they let go during the seance, bad things would happen. Which wasn't true. I just wanted to see if they believed me, and they did. Midnight was on my right, his fingers strong and sturdy, like thieves. Thomas was on my left. He had long, elfish fingers that were warm, almost hot. I waited until Buttercup and Briggs and Zoe were clasped and ready. Nothing happened. I asked Poppy if she was present. Nothing happened. The house creaked and moaned, and the Yellows breathed and twitched and fidgeted, and Midnight squeezed my hand. Nothing happened. I called out to Poppy again. I told her I was ready and listening. Nothing happened. The candles flickered and the wind picked up outside, but I wasn't cold. I was warm suddenly. Warm like I had a fire burning in me. I held my breath and pictured myself as a cavern, deep and open. A vessel that needed to be filled, just as Mim had taught me. Nothing happened. And then my head flipped back, my mouth opened and my eyes shut and my tongue fluttered and the words poured. I thrashed and whispered and shouted and the words poured and poured. I was Autumn Lind with the kitchen knife, and then I was Martin screaming and screaming, the blood gushing out. Gushing right here in this room. Tell my children I love them. Tell them. Tell them. And then I was Autumn again, choking and shaking as my neck snapped in the noose. I thrashed and screamed, and then the words stopped. I brought my head upright again, opened my eyes, relaxed my shoulders. Midnight and the Yellows were shaking, and I could feel their fear in the air, crackling like static during a thunderstorm. And right on cue, it started raining outside. Like I'd commanded it. Like I'd called it down from the night sky. The rain tore at the broken window and splashed inside and hit me on the cheek. And I was the queen now. Bow down before me. This is how it was meant to be. This was how it was supposed to be. All of them watching and waiting on my every word. Breaths held. I yanked my hands free from Midnight and Thomas, one swift move, and got to my feet. God, you're all such losers, I said. First thing out of my mouth, and they all just stared, stared, as if I hadn't called each of them a loser countless times in the past. Hundreds, thousands, millions. I looked down at myself, touched my hair, stroked my bony knees with my palms. Can you believe this shit? Feral Bell? Beggars can't be choosers, I guess. They stared and stared, and I just let them take me in. Poppy? Poppy, where are you? Are you okay? What happened to you? Squeaking, pathetic little voices. I'm dead, I whispered, and then laughed. Dead? I'm dead, and this house is my tomb, and I want you to burn it down. I want you to burn the Roman Luck House to the ground. The rain pelted in, and the lightning ran slick across the stars, and I stood there with my hands on my hips, and all of them watching my every move, frozen with fear. Their pitiful faces stretched open and so, so terrified. They asked me questions, so many questions. Who did this and who did that and what about the letters and what about the clues and oh, they were so sorry, so very sorry. And it bored me to tears. So finally, I put my hands on Thomas's shoulders and straddled him, one skinny leg nestling up to each hip, knees squeezing in. I kissed him. I kissed him deep. I writhed my body and swung my hair, and he kissed me back. I wasn't sure he would, but oh yes, he did. He pulled his other hand free and put both on me, while they all just stared. And then I whispered in his ear, "Remember the night we did it in the rain, in the wet grass by the Blue Twist? The cold drops hit our bare skin, and we shivered like ghosts, and were slippery like eels. I never told anyone, did you?" And Thomas shook his head, and then I got up and went around the circle. I whispered in all their ears. I whispered all their secrets, and they watched and stared, and I sashayed around them and let my hips flick side to side, let my long spine arch and my hair swing. I was the queen. I was the villain. I ruled them all. I let their worship wash right over me like a cool rain, like the rain outside, cooling down the sky. And it felt so good. I wanted to scream, scream, scream with joy. Keep staring, you fools. Keep staring. Soak it up. Soak it up. Soak me up like rays of sunshine after a storm. There'll never be anyone like me again. Never, ever, ever, ever. Midnight was last. I went around the circle and saved him for last. I sat in his lap and gripped his hair in my fingers, and he looked horrified. Beautifully and genuinely horrified. And my red hair fell around his cheeks, and I pushed my chest into his and whispered in his ear, "I'm sorry I teased you about the magic tricks that one time. I felt bad about it afterward, I really did. I'm sorry I teased you about everything, Midnight. All of this, the letters and the seance, all of it was for you. Just so I could say I miss you. God, how I miss you. Time goes slower where I am. It feels like years since I last crawled into your bed.
years and years. I just wanted to see you one last time, Midnight. I needed to say I'm sorry.
He pushed me off of him, right off, like I burned, like I was poison. And my foot hit a candle, and the candle hit the blanket, and then fire.
Midnight. Wink made us all hold hands. I took hers in my right, Buttercup's in my left. Jasmine. That was first. The smells of the Roman Luckhouse, the smells of dust and rot and woods and mold, gone. All gone. And the air filled with jasmine. The yellows smelled it too. Their eyes went wide. I saw it. They knew what it meant. The smell was thick, sickly, and I wanted to cover my nose with my hand, but Wink had warned us not to let go. Wink.
Poppy, are you here?
She said. Her voice was calm and clear and soft. Silence. I squeezed her hand.
I'm listening, Poppy. I'm ready.
Silence. It started small. Wink's eyes closed, and her lips drew tight. Tight, as if her face was trying to swallow her mouth. Her cheeks sunk in. Hard, dark, hollow bruises. The yellows stopped turning their heads and sniffing the air. We all froze. Wink's head tilted back, so far her hair touched the floor. And her body went rigid. It snapped, like a rope pulled tight. Like the rope that we used to tie up Poppy, snap,